You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
This is East Carolina Hall of Famer and Utah Jazz first-round draft pick Blue Edwards. You're listening to Pirate Basketball Overtime on The Sports Objective, your home for the best East Carolina hoops coverage.
Welcome in to Pirate Basketball Overtime, coming to you 24 hours after the Pirates' heartbreaking 60-59 defeat to North Texas. The Mean Green find a way to get it done there in the waning seconds at Minji's on Wednesday night. And now to break down this heartbreaking loss for ECU, welcome in Matt Semenza. Matt, man, what a heartbreaker that was last night for the Pirates.
Yeah, Bubba, another obviously really tough loss for this team. And, you know, reminiscent of the UCF football game, I think it's what was 2014 when we lost on a Hail Mary. Couldn't help.
But I had that same thought.
Yeah, couldn't help but think of that. But, yeah, I mean, this was a game that the Pirates should have won at home. Certainly had their opportunities, but just couldn't execute down the stretch. And, we're going to break it all down tonight.
Yeah, poor possessions there on a few occasions at least in the final few minutes. And then you miss free throws. You allow second and third chances and didn't really have a good feeling. And then you have the Pirates, well, it wasn't final possession, next to last possession. R.J. Felton banks it in from about 18 feet. After Brandon Johnson appeared to get away with the travel, you felt like, hey, we're going to get away with one, not executing, not making free throws, allowing those second chance buckets. And then you didn't get away with it because of allowing a 85-foot pass you don't guard the inbounds. We'll dive into all the logistics and just the strategy there on that sequence here in just a minute after we run the clip. But a lot to dissect.
Absolutely. And you know, you make a great point that we did not put a man over the inbounds pass. And I mean, that's an excellent point. And you know, obviously we didn't have a timeout in that spot. You know, and I'm sure if we did, Mike Schwartz would have, you know, used that timeout and drawn it up a little more effectively. But, you know, in that situation without a timeout, you know, I don't think we were lined up properly. And you know, there was definitely a push off on Brandon Johnson there. But I just think you have to be able to make that play. You know, you just can't, whether a guy pushes off or not in that situation, you have to be able to make that play and not let him get behind you. So we'll definitely get into that too.
Yeah. You it's almost like we're mesmerized in a trance there. And then there definitely was some two hands and arms extended for the North Texas player, Allen. But, I found that very interesting the way we chose not to guard the inbounds pass. And you had probably 6 or 7 seconds to set your defense, and without a timeout, that was about best case scenario as far as that's concerned. It's not like North Texas got the ball and just immediately slung it down the court. They had a chance to collect themselves a little bit and probably weren't too awfully far away from a 5-second call. Not sure where things stood there, but Ezra Asar, after the shot went in by RJ, Ezra was probably 25 feet from the basket there, just beyond the top of the key and guarding it air. Not sure why him at 6'7", with his athleticism, why he wasn't guarding that inbounds pass.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good catch, you know, on your part, and definitely something that, you know, I'm sure if we had back, we would defend that differently. But it's a breakdown. Nonetheless, that is a huge breakdown there. And to your point, there's no way you make an accurate pass from that distance if you have, you know, some length defensively in front of that pass. So, you know, just another blunder there. You know, for me, Bubba, when I knew that this game was could really go either way, we were up 55-51 right around the 4-minute mark. And during that stretch, there was a stretch there of about 3.5 minutes where we held North Texas scoreless. During that stretch, we had 3 or 4 offensive possessions. Now, we're up 4 points with, like I said, 3 or 4 offensive possessions. If we were able to score there, just get a bucket, regardless, 2 or 3, whatever it is, you have a chance to really extend that lead and really put that game, possibly put it away. But we go through a drought, unable to convert on any of those possessions, miss the front end of a 1-and-1, and allow them to get right back in the game with a 3-pointer. So very frustrating because, you know, it just continues to bite this team where down the stretch when you need buckets, you just, you know, you can't really find them. And I know Felton had the, I guess you would call it, I would call it kind of a lucky bank shot off the backboard, but inability to get those tough buckets down the stretch when you have a lead, you know, obviously made this game, you know, we just couldn't put it away.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the play-by-play now, yeah, 3 possessions there with that 55-51 lead during the 2-minute, 2 to 3 minute mark of the game. So you had that chance to, like you say, extend the lead. You had the chance to extend the lead with free throws. And I remember, you know, making the comment to multiple Pirates in those waning minutes, said, I don't have a good feeling about this. We're having some poor possessions, not making free throws, allowing those second chance opportunities. And you know, not to beat a dead horse, but I told him I just really don't feel like we're going to pull it out. And then it looked like we were going to have the opportunity to kind of get away with things and you know, learn from those mistakes in a victory, but not to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I was on mute there. Yeah, just, you know, just obviously a, you know, that's a tough loss to swallow because that's a game you really had an opportunity to win at home, and just so many blunders down the stretch. And, you know, going back to that stretch where we were up 55-51, we had 3 possessions there. You know, I would have liked to see us try to pump the ball down low, maybe to Ezra. When Ezra gets the ball on the low block, typically 2 things are going to happen. He's either going to score or he's going to get fouled and go to the free throw line. I like to take my chances there with him on the low block in that situation. Our offense was completely perimeter-based at that point. And, you know, we just couldn't get a clean look. I would have tried to pump it down low, even put Brandon Johnson in the low block. He's pretty effective down there. You know, that's something I think we're going to have to do more of, you know, in crunch time moving forward, because if you're going to just live and die with the perimeter shots, it's going to be tough to win these games.
It is. And the Pirates, it seems like a decent amount of the time have gotten off to relatively slow starts, but that was not the case last night. ECU halfway through the first half, a little over past the halfway mark of the half, a little over 9 minutes to play, and we led 19-12. Then didn't play as well, and then trailed at by four at halftime. So Mean Green outscoring the Pirates by 11 over that final nine and a half minutes of the first half. And then the ECU trailed by as many as seven. But the Mean Green, and really a solid team. We were talking about it before we went live. And North Texas, obviously last year, under their former coach, who's now at Texas Tech, Grant McCaslin, and they won 30-31 ball games, won the NIT. They hire from within this year. Once again, very good, now 4-0 in the American, and came in with a net of 60, or just over 60, and really one of the better teams that the Pirates have played thus far, behind probably Florida Atlantic, and then also the Gators, in addition to, I'm trying to remember, there's one other team, but fourth as far as the net's concerned, and ahead of the likes of South Carolina. And the Gamecocks have that 14-3 record, but played a very weak non-conference schedule.
Yeah, and when you when you kind of like break it down like you just did, it's really starting to become the season of what ifs. I mean, there's a handful of games here, five or six games that, had we just executed down the stretch, we win those games. And it's really starting to become a very frustrating season, because you can see, I say this on almost every show, there are glimpses of this team where they play fantastic and we look very talented and we could do a lot of good things on the court. And then there are other times where we just don't execute. And I'm not sure where that inconsistency comes from, but this is certainly starting to become a situation where this season can quickly get away from us in conference play here. And, I think the defense was good enough to win that game last night. But again, for me, it's really the inability to find buckets down the stretch to win these games. And, they're going to have to figure that out if they're going to have any success in conference play here, because, this does start to get the feeling where it's going to get away a little bit.
We talked about RJ making the shot to put ECU up by 159-58 there with just over 3 seconds remaining. RJ had a very good night to knock down a few three-pointers. But taking a look in the first half, it was very balanced scoring. No one really lit it up, but you had six Pirates score. And ECU shot just 37.5% in the first half, 4 out of 12 from three, and were out-rebounded significantly in the first half, as they were in the game. But one of the things that really stood out to me initially, obviously, Ezra Assar coming off the bench, that was because, as we found out in the post game, as I suspected may have been the case, and it was, Coach Schwartz confirmed that was due to Ezra being late, whether it was for a team meeting or meal, what have you, and as a result, Sir Malonga got the start, did some nice things there early, and ended up playing 12 minutes in the game. And then for North Texas, Edwards, who finished the game with 20, and we'll run over those final stats in just a few minutes, but Edwards had 10 of those in the first half. So taking a look at the final numbers for the game, East Carolina had three guys in double figures, led by R.J. Felton. R.J. in 34 minutes had 16 points, 6 out of 16 from the floor. So not the best shooting night for R.J., but he did, as I mentioned, shoot the ball very well from the perimeter, as he was 4 out of 10 from three-point range. So although he was fortunate on that shot that gave ECU a lead, R.J. very much was the reason the Pirates were in that situation to take the lead because of the way he had shot the basketball from three. You know, one of his better games from three this season. And again, 16 points, six rebounds in 34 minutes for R.J. Felton. You had Cam Hayes. Cam finished with 12 points, four rebounds. Brandon Johnson had 11 and 8, so just a couple rebounds shy of another double-double for Brandon in 38 minutes, a team high. Bobby Pettiford did not score. Bobby's been struggling of late, and Bobby was 0 for 5 from the floor, missed both free throws he attempted in 24 minutes.
And just to jump in on that really quick, Bubba, I mean, that to me, Pettiford is the one that really jumps out to me. You know, 0 for 5 field goals. You know, this is a talented player offensively. You know, he can get into the lane. He can finish at the rim. We need to get him going because he's too talented of a player to go 24 minutes and have 0 points. So I just wanted to interject with that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And kind of as a result, and then perhaps also for defensive purposes, Jaden Walker saw significant minutes. Jaden played 23 minutes off the bench, scored 8 points, 3 for 3 from the floor, knocked down a three-pointer. Did miss a couple of free throws there in the second half, and he was – definitely not by himself there. ECU just 11 out of 18 from the line. And as we've referenced on a few occasions already, that was one of the things that really stood out in this one-point loss to a very talented North Texas ball club. I mean, ECU also had Ezra Asar coming off the bench, scoring 9. And just 5 field goal attempts, and Ezra knocked down 5 out of 6 from the line. So that's awesome to see Ezra shooting free throws so well.
Absolutely, and that's huge. And that's another reason why I really like the idea of getting the ball to him on the low block in situations where you really need a bucket, because he is starting to shoot free throws better. You know, last year I might not have said that, but he's showing improvement from the free throw line. So, you know, that's something I think we need to try to do more of, you know, looking forward. You know, the other thing about Ezra there, he had a real tough stretch. You know, I think within about a 1 minute stretch there, around the 2 minute mark, he had 3 fouls in a row. So, you know, just kind of a tough finish down the stretch, but another really talented player who, you know, we just need to get him going.
Taking a look at the team numbers, Pirates for the game shot 41.7%, 20 out of 48. North Texas, something that really stands out. And we talked about the Pirates' inability, you know, to keep the mean green off the glass. North Texas, 15 offensive rebounds compared to just 6 for the Pirates, out-rebounded 40 to 28 overall. And as a result, North Texas had 60 shot attempts compared to just the 48 for ECU. And then because actually the Pirates shot a better percentage, 41.7 as opposed to 40 for UNT. From 3, North Texas, 5 out of 24. When kind of watching the game, it seemed like they shot the ball better than that. But just 20% beyond the arc for North Texas. And then the Pirates were 8 out of 22, 36.4 from the charity stripe. As I mentioned, 11 out of 18 for the Pirates, 7 out of 9, 77.8 for the mean green. Taking a look at the assists, 12 for ECU, 10 for North Texas. Pirates had 8 steals compared to 4 for the mean green. And then the turnovers, you perhaps, you know, had a few at inopportune times there late, but overall, not a bad number, 9 for ECU and 10 for North Texas. Points in the paint, a glaring weakness last night, 36 for North Texas compared to just 20 for ECU.
Well, that certainly, that stat really hurts. And, you know, I'm going to go back up to the top here for a second. The free throw percentage, Bubba, you know, another game, 61% from the line. North Texas, only 9 attempts, but they shot, you know, almost 78%. So, you know, when you're in a 1 or 2 point game, you know, at some point you're going to have to become more efficient from the free throw line.
No doubt. And something else, the officials were really letting the teams play last night. And you look, there's only a combined 23 fouls in the game, 11 for East Carolina, 12 for North Texas. And so and to North Texas credit also, going back to that number with 36 points in the paint, they hit several contested, very challenging shots.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously North Texas is a very solid team. You know, I'm sure they'll do good things this year again. But that's one that really got away. You know, I mean, that's just one that, you know, you could tell Mike Schwartz after the game, he was visibly frustrated with that loss. And, you know, I'm sure they're kicking themselves today for letting that one get away. But hey, you know, the only thing, you know, you can really do is watch the film, you know, learn from it and move on at this point. And hopefully you can correct some of those mistakes next time.
Yep, obviously much easier said than done, but need to go down to UAB and play well on, I believe, Saturday against the Blazers. Of course, in East Carolina, UAB met many times back in the Conference USA days, and now going to do so in the American. But it kind of something else. We have not played the clip correct. Let's go to that clip. This is, I know we referenced it earlier. Have not gone to that yet. And this is from at ECU Jungle on X. Jared Plummer does an excellent job, and he was in Minji's last night. And here's what that final sequence looked like.
Ouch. Ouch. And that's tough to watch. That is tough to watch.
In a couple things. First, kind of working in reverse here. There, Ezra, not too far off the mark. And to be honest with you, I was so ticked at us allowing the 85-foot baseballs pass that live, I did not even see Ezra Asar's, you know, 55-footer to win it, or, you know, to attempt to win it. And then when I went back and watched, I was like, that actually, he almost, you know, he came fairly close to matching what Bobby Pettiford did against Kennesaw State. So, you know, what a story that would have been. But, you know, to our credit, you know, we continued to play and nearly about pulled off another miracle there. But, you saw what we were referencing there with Ezra out beyond the three-point line, not guarding the inbounds pass. I don't believe Coach Schwartz was asked about that in the post game. I may be mistaken, but I take that back. I think he was. I know he was asked about that sequence and what he said. You know, with 3 and a fraction, I think it was 3.2, something like that left. That North Texas guards were just too good to give them the opportunity to catch the ball in the backcourt and have the chance to knock down, to get the ball into the front court and make you know, a 35-footer or something of that nature. But at the same time, if you're going to, you know, choose to not go on the inbounds pass, you know, we had too many people watching there, and I know that's something that that we'll really learn from, you know, all coaches and players.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I personally like to cover the inbounds pass there, and I do think that was a mistake. And then, you know, from Brandon Johnson's perspective, you know, there's always like the debate of how do you guard that? Do you face guard in that situation? Do you front it? Do you line up behind the offensive player? You saw what, you know, in that situation, you know, you remember the famous Christian Laettner play where he caught the ball and turned and hit the 15-foot jump shot. Personally, I like to line up parallel with that player because it gives you a chance to read the ball. Sometimes if you face guard in that situation, if the ball gets over your head, you have problems. And that's kind of what happened. I mean, there was a clear push on Brandon Johnson there, clear push to create some space and make that play. But, you know, East Carolina has to take full responsibility for letting that happen there.
Yeah, it was, and like you said, it was just it's almost like it was in slow motion. You saw how wide open he was, and you know, RJ attempted to come off his man and get over and contest. Well, he did contest the shot, but it was a little too late.
Too little, too late.
But you know, enough of you know, we've dwelled on that play enough, I guess. But hard not to. But moving on, I'm taking a look at things from here. I mean, East Carolina will have to do its best to not allow that to turn into another loss on Saturday when they travel down to Birmingham. And taking a look at UAB and the Blazers. Actually played North Texas last year in the NIT championship, coming up shy. But UAB 11-6, 3-1 in the American. So another game against a team there in the upper third or so of the standings. That's right there with the likes of, you know, Memphis, North Texas, and Florida Atlantic, et cetera.
Absolutely. And like we always talk about, Bob, the margin of victory for this team is so thin. It's so thin. I do think, you know, Mike Schwartz's game plan on most nights and scrappy defense is going to keep this team in most games. But definitely another huge challenge on the road at UAB. And, you know, but, you know, you really need a win here because, like I said, you don't want to let conference play start to slip too far away. So it's a big game. It's a big game on Saturday.
Taking a look at the team numbers for UAB, definitely jumps off the page. The Blazers are averaging right at 77.5 points a game. And you find it interesting that considering they're averaging right at 80 points, their leading scorer is just averaging 12 points a game. So, taking a look at their team numbers, you know, they're led by Eric Gaines, and he leads them with 12-1, 4 rebounds, and a little over 4.5 assists per game. However, he's just shooting 37.5% from the floor. You know, 6'2", 165-pound guard out of Lithonia, Georgia. So,
big challenge for us to stop him.
Yeah, it has to be some pretty balanced scoring for the Blazers, obviously, considering averaging 77 and their leading scorer is just at 12. Then you have Lindeborg. He's leading them in rebounds, 9.6 per game, also right at 12 points per game, shooting nearly 52% from the floor, 6'9", 230 pounds from your home state of New Jersey.
Got to represent New Jersey, Bubba. Glad to see that.
So, taking a look around the American at some of the results. I know tonight you have Florida Atlantic and 23rd ranked Owls victorious over Wichita State 86-77. And the Shockers actually led that game in Boca 42-31 at the break, and then it was all Florida Atlantic in the second half as they outscored the Shockers 55-35 and to go on to that 9-point victory. And hey, Matt, there have been several close calls for the Memphis Tigers. The Tigers rose to 10th in this week's top 25 rankings, but Penny Hardaway and company go down at the FedEx Forum tonight, 74-73 to the South Florida Bulls.
That's a rough loss for Penny and Memphis. Very surprising.
And not only do they lose on a had to be a terrible second half, because they led that game 47-32 at the break, but the Bulls outscore the Tigers 42-26. As you can tell, Riley's excited about his video game there in the background, screaming like.
Well, that's a fantastic win for South Florida to be able to get that done.
And then Miguel led the Bulls with 23 points, while Jones had 25 for the Tigers. And going back to Wednesday night in the American, in addition to the East Carolina North Texas game, you had UAB, Saturday's opponent for the Pirates, victorious over Tulane, 83-69. And the Green Wave now 11-6, 2-3, as is East Carolina, 2-3 in the American. And we'll run through those complete standings very quickly here in just a moment. And then you also had Tulsa. Just a few nights ago, you had the Memphis Tigers score a conference record as far as the number of points scored in a AAC game with, I believe it was 112 they scored out at Wichita State. So Tulsa nearly topped it. Tulsa on Wednesday night, 107, the UTSA Roadrunners, 78. A much needed win there in a battle of beaten teams, if you will, as the Roadrunners and Golden Hurricane were 0-4 entering that one. And go ahead, Matt.
Just going to say, obviously a lot of, as you go through these scores, I mean, the thing that comes to mind, Bubba, is just a lot of balance in this league, a lot of good teams, like good solid teams. And just to take it back to ECU for a minute, they're just gonna have to bring it every game and find a way to get some wins here, because I don't think anything is gonna come easy for this team. But pretty impressive league when you look at it from top to bottom, and some of the new additions playing well.
And again, Tulsa won that battle of the winless teams by 29. And so running through the conference standings, you have North Texas now, the Mean Green are on top all by themselves in the league standings. 4-0 is North Texas. Memphis, a half game back at 4-1, as is Florida Atlantic and the Charlotte 49ers. A bit of a surprise there under their first-year head coach. And you have that three-way tie between Memphis, FAU, and Charlotte. SMU, a full game back at 3-1, as is South Florida and UAB. Tulane and ECU, 2-3, 2.5 games back. Tulsa and Temple, as well as UTSA. Those three programs are at 1-4, 3.5 games back. And then Wichita State, it sounds – weird to say, but the Shockers are 0-4, as is Rice, and they sit at the bottom of the league standings. Overall, you know, Memphis has the best record at 15-3, FAU 14-4. And then you also have SMU, the Mustangs, now 12-5 overall.
Yeah, those teams at the top of the conference are playing well. Also had some comments, Bubba, from – I know Johnny Robertson had some comments. I don't know if you're able to pull those up.
Yeah, but appreciate everyone chiming in tonight on YouTube, Facebook, and X. And, you know, if you're currently tuned in and have not commented, if you have something, go ahead and send it to us. You know, we'll be live for another 5 to 10 minutes tonight. Johnny Gardner says, have to follow the inbound kid for a kickback, is what he said. And Johnny Robertson said, the Pirates started 8 of 9 from the line and finished 3 out of 9, including a missed front end of a 1-1.
Ouch. Yep, that's a killer. That's a killer, yep. Bubba. You know, and that's a you're just not going to win games like that, 3 of 9. And the front end of those 1-1s are just – they're killer down the stretch.
Justin Butts, one of our regulars, and Justin chimes in just saying, what a heartbreaking loss, undoubtedly. I believe this may have been – was this the comment you were referencing?
Yeah.
JR said, are we starting to see a transition at point guard? This is the first time all season that Jaden has played the point. Last season in the final 8 games, people forget that he averaged a little over 39 minutes a game, 15.5 points and 5.5 assists while playing point guard after Javon Small went down with his season-ending injury and then obviously chose to enter the transfer portal following the season and is now at Oklahoma State. But said that Jaden seems to be uncomfortable off the ball, but last night played a significant amount of point, played 23 minutes, 3 out of 3 from the floor, and knocked down the only 3-pointer he shot.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good question, you know, by Johnny, and it's something I was kind of thinking about too. I mean, I'm happy to share my thoughts on that. I mean, you know, I think Pettiford played 24 minutes last night. I think that Mike Schwartz wanted, you know, I think he wanted defense down the stretch. And so you're definitely starting to see more minutes go to Walker at point guard. Now, if you look at the last 2 games, you know, Pettiford has been on the bench, you know, down the stretch. You had LeCount get heavy minutes a few games ago. And then obviously last night, Walker. I think ideally, you know, and obviously you need timeouts, but you can try to go offense and defense there where, you know, ideally I'd like to see Pettiford on the floor offensively, but I think Walker gives you a better chance with his length defensively. So, you know, it's a tough one. I think you're going to see both of those guys. This is just a hunch I have. I think you're going to see both of those guys get heavy minutes at point guard. And I do agree. I think Walker has looked his best at ECU when he plays point guard. And it has been surprising to me, Bubba, that he didn't, I guess that he didn't get that opportunity in the first half of the season. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, a little surprised. I know you've been battling a hamstring injury. I'm sure that has definitely played a role. But the last 2 minutes, I believe Jaden has played a combined, you know, 48 or 50 minutes. So, good to see him back playing significant minutes and not only playing significant minutes, going right along with that, just the way he's contributing on both ends of the court.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, what Mike Schwartz does with that situation. But I think that I do think you're going to see Walker at the point for the remainder of the season.
You know, before we touch on a couple other topics and wrap up tonight's show, you know, wanted to thank our loyal new sponsor. You know, appreciate the support of former East Carolina offensive lineman Big Ed Watkins, Ed Watkins Marine. Ed's been in the business for years, even while he was still involved with NASCAR. Now he's strictly in the boat business. Again, Ed Watkins Marine, appreciate their support of the show. They have two locations to serve you in Denver, North Carolina. They can be found on North Carolina Highway 16, 3333 North Carolina Highway 16 business, rather. And you can reach them via phone at that location, 704-483-BOAT. Again, 704-483-BOAT at their Denver store. Their second location is in Cornelius. They can be found at 18919 West Catawba Avenue, Suite B. Reach them via phone, 704-498-4985. Again, 704-498-4985. You know, they have fishing boats, center consoles, family friend, bow riders, trailers, pontoon boats, engines, UTVs, you name it. Whether you're looking to buy a new boat or repower your existing boat, you know, Ed Watkins Marine can satisfy all of your boating needs. Again, edwatkinsmarine.com. We appreciate Big Ed's support of the program.
Bubba, I had an opportunity to, when Big Ed was still in his NASCAR days, he was, I went out to Pocono Raceway, and Big Ed was on one pit crew, and Jeff Carr was with, I think he was with Martin Truex Jr. at that point, and I had an opportunity to, and you know, I'm not a big NASCAR guy, but got an opportunity to watch the race from the pits. I was right down on pit road, and had a chance to watch both of those guys up close and personal. It was pretty awesome to see, you know, when you get a whole new perspective on racing when you watch it from the pits, and those guys were great. I mean, it was awesome to watch them run their crew. And just a little side note, Bubba, I did almost take a lug nut to the face. A lug nut flew off during a tire change and missed my head by about maybe 8 inches. So wouldn't have been as fun of a day if I got hit with that, but it was pretty awesome to see. So appreciate Big Ed and his sponsorship.
Yeah, you about left pit road with battle scar.
I would have probably been in the hospital from that, because that thing came that right. Thing, I mean, that it was it flew off fast. So yeah, interesting story, but it was pretty awesome to see, and I came away with a whole new appreciation for NASCAR.
Yeah, I definitely I would love to attend a NASCAR race sometime. As you just stated, not a NASCAR guy whatsoever, but have not had the opportunity to attend a race, and I would like to do that just to see what it's all about. And like you said, is, you know, you see something up close like that, is definitely makes you have an appreciation for how difficult it is. And I know we, a few years ago for professional development beginning the school year, my school visited Joe Gibbs Racing over in Mooresville, and that was an eye-opening experience there, because they, you know, they showed us what it was like as far as the hundredths of a second mattering, you know, with a pit stop and all the detail that's involved, and how much those guys lift weights and practice that to get it down to, you know, that fraction of a second.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, all those guys are in great shape, and it really is a, you know, it's a science, you know, when you see it up close and personal, and, you know, just the process that they go through. So not going to try to sound like an expert on NASCAR here, cause I'm not, but I'll just say I came away with a much better appreciation for it.
Getting back to basketball, something I realized we have not discussed on the show, and you know, I guess it was about a week ago, not quite a week ago now, where, and give credit here to Stephen Igo at Hoist the Colors. He broke the news that the Pirates picked up a commitment from a 6'7 junior college wing from Indian River State College. and that is, forgive me if I'm mispronouncing this name. I have not heard the pronunciation, have been unable to find it thus far online. J. Shane Woodard committed to Mike Schwartz and staff. He's averaging right around 15 points a game. Is a member, as you would guess, being a JUCO guy with the 2024 class, and also had offers, you know, from Arkansas State, Florida International, you know, FIU, Manhattan, and Northern Illinois, Oakland, Robert Morris, Stony Brook, and Youngstown State, as well as interest from several high major programs. You know, he became the second member of the 2024 class, in addition to R.J. Felton's brother, LaDante, who I believe is more commonly referred to as Booby Felton. You also have Word of God point guard Jordan Vick, you know, who used to be at Southern Nash High School. He reclassified and is now a commitment for the 2025 cycle. But Matt, I know you're aware of the commitment, certainly, but have you had the opportunity to check out the film of J. Shane Woodard?
I really haven't yet, Bubba. But, you know, 6'7", you know, shoots a high percentage from the 3-point line, and you can't have enough of those guys. So hopefully he pans out and has a great career.
I will tell you, I did see probably 3 or 4 minutes worth of highlights, and what I saw, a comparison here that Pirate fans can relate to, you know, he's 6'7". Tristan Newton was about 6'5". Reminds me, you know, the way he plays and his shot, not the quickest of releases, and it's kind of more of a set shot like a Tristan Newton, but he reminds me of a little bit taller Tristan Newton, a guy that has versatility to handle the basketball. No, he's not a point guard like Tristan is, but he can definitely handle the basketball very well, and really like what I saw with his aggressiveness, taking the ball to the basket, and also, as you mentioned, shooting a very high percentage, I believe around 40% from beyond the arc.
Sounds like a great pickup, and you know, in this age of kind of almost like positionless basketball at times, where you just have a bunch of guys who are 6'7", 6'8", that can handle the ball and shoot threes and take it to the hole. I mean, sounds like a good pickup to me. I'm definitely going to check out the film, you know, maybe in the next day or two, and, you know, see how it goes.
And Johnny Gardner chiming in regarding Woodard, saying the kid grew up beside Rucker Park, heart of basketball.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting. I didn't know that.
So, as always, you can count on Johnny Hoops to provide some interesting tidbits on when we're talking Pirate basketball or just college basketball in general.
And absolutely. What's up, Johnny?
But J. Shane, despite being at Indian River State College down in Florida, you know, as Johnny just referenced, he's a New York native, and looking forward to him becoming part of the Pirates program. Said that he also pulled down 11.9 rebounds per game, mm-hmm. and three and a half assists per game. So very much like Tristan Newton, who I compared him to with his style of play, he can stuff a stat sheet.
We'd love to see Tristan Newton back in a Pirate uniform, Bubba. He's having a fantastic season for UConn. I know at one point Jay Billis had him, this is, you know, a few weeks back, he had him as his national player of the year at one point. So he's having a great great season up here in UConn territory.
Yep. Definitely. I remember us discussing that a few weeks back as far as the season that Tristan's having, and glad to see him doing well, because, you know, it was one of those things with the change in leadership. Had it not been for the change in leadership, who knows? But we had heard that Tristan might have remained a Pirate, but since the staff that had brought him to Greenville was no longer leading the program, it's understandable that he opted to pursue new opportunities, especially with some of those opportunities he had on the table. But, you know, really, that's about all I have for tonight. Do you have anything else, Matt, before we wrap this edition of Pirate Basketball Overtime up?
No, I think we covered it all, and just hoping we get a win on Saturday.
And again, Pirates lose a heartbreaker, about as much of a heartbreaker as you can have. 60-59 on Wednesday night to the Mean Green of North Texas. With that loss, and the Pirates fell to 9-9 overall and 2-3 in the American. So that means ECU has 13 remaining regular season games as the Pirates play 18 AAC games. And, you know, hopefully the Pirates will be able to play better late in games and win more conference games than ever before and find a way to have that elusive winning season you know, for the first time since 2012-2013.
We'll see what happens, buddy.
But, you know, for Matt Semenza, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. We appreciate everyone tuning in tonight and chiming in on Facebook, YouTube, and X. That will do it for us on this edition of Pirate Basketball Overtime. And, you know, be sure to follow us on social media. On X, you can follow us at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram and TikTok at The Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And when you subscribe to our YouTube channel, be sure to click that bell and you know, click notifications and all, so that way anytime we go live or upload new content, you're alerted on your device. And you know, kind of, you know, one other quick note, we uploaded a short today. Yannick Smith, you know, the very talented Pirate football wide receiver that's headed to ECU from Somerville, South Carolina, down there on the South Carolina coast. He's also a tremendous basketball player, one of the top in the Palmetto State. Check out the dunk he had in a game on Wednesday night. I believe it was very impressive, a highlight reel dunk by Yannick Smith. And it's easy to see, you know how, you know, he's such a good wide receiver, you know, with such leaping ability. And be interesting to see in the future, you know, whether, you know, he's someone that the Pirates throw a lot of fade balls and jump balls to down in the red zone. But again, you've been watching Pirate Basketball Overtime here on The Sports Objective. We'll talk to you soon. And as always, go Pirates.
What purple?